Sports Ethos.
What's up, Grizz Nation? Welcome to the show. You got the whole crew tonight. We don't have to wait on Candace. She didn't sell us out. She was not at this game live. She decided to stay in the M. It's going to be a short show. We're going to end it quick. Grizz in five. I said that shit. I mean it. You can find the show on Twitter at... No, I'm just kidding.
Roll the credits. Roll the credits.
So this was an insane game. A lot of highs and lows for Grizzlies fans. A lot of highs and lows for the guys that were out on the floor. Ja Morant finished with a triple-double, but he did not have it tonight. This was not his game. He did not... You know, you say, oh, well, he got a triple-double. I don't think that he played all that well. And he said, he was on Twitter and Drew Hill tweeted out and said, you know, Ja Morant finished with a triple-double, but he'll still tell you that he didn't play well. But, like, I'm not going to gas Ja up for this game because I'm glad that he had the triple-double. Without that, the Grizzlies probably don't win. But this was far from his best performance.
Yeah, I honestly don't think he played well at all tonight. But one thing, I think he was hurt. He did not look 100% for me. To me, I know he got the knee check by Cat last game left and came back in, but then he kind of fell on it. I think that was in the third quarter, fell hard going up for a layup, got fouled. He kind of fell on that same side. I saw him even before then. There were times where you come back up the court and you kind of see him kind of rubbing that side. I don't think he was 100%. Some of those moves that you saw to the basket, he normally would have finished some of those. I know there was a couple ones for sure I knew, and I was like, he's not right. But, I mean, he persevered, man, and pushed through. But, again, like David said, this is definitely not his best game. I think game two, definitely last game, was the best game in the series, despite him scoring 30-plus in game one. The second game was definitely his best game in the series, but he just didn't have it tonight. Hopefully he can – again, man, get that hip right, because I do think it was bothering him. I think he wouldn't tell you that because he's a guy that's a warrior. He's going to go out there and play. If he can walk, he said before, if he can walk, he's going to go out there and play. But wild, wild game tonight, man. They asked all the guys in the post-game press conference to a man that they ever been a part of something like this. And they were like, no, Dez was like, man, I've been in part of something where I was down 20 once and we came back, but not twice, not two times. I know this is the craziest game I've ever seen that I can remember. I don't know if I've ever seen a team come back from down 26-25, especially come back and win the game.
Yeah, this game was something else. It was very interesting to watch, sort of the ins and outs. And I think that just goes to show you the poise that this team was able to show, the grit, the grind. The grit and grind era is still very much so alive and well in this team. It showed tonight. It was just one of those games where you just had to dig deep, and that's exactly what the Grizzlies were able to do. They have had experiences like this before. Sure, they're inexperienced to a degree, but the games that they've gone through, they have some playoff experience. I think they've learned a lot. Them playing games without Ja, I think they've just learned some valuable lessons that paid off in this game. And Minnesota just hadn't been there, I think, from the coaching down on to some of the decisions down at the end. I think just the Grizzlies have more. Our depth really showed tonight. People said that depth would matter when it came to the playoffs. It wouldn't matter at all. And it's the second game in a row now that the Grizzlies have won, and it's been in great part to their bench and to their depth. And so tip my cap to the Grizzlies, continuing to prove people wrong and do this their style and their way. Great win at the end of the day. We did what it took to get the W, and that's all that matters in the playoffs.
Before we say anything else, man, I got to give my man David his props. Man, he did me at the end of the third quarter. He was like, man, the Grizzlies are going to win this game. And I was the big believer in this team, talking all game about their resiliency and the fact that they would come back. But even at that point, I was a little bit skeptical, man. But he called it. But you could tell that the Timberwolves were a little bit gassed at the end of that third quarter. The Grizzlies looked a little bit fresher. You could see a little bit at the end of that third, like, they might be a little tired, but I didn't think the Grizzlies would maybe get all the way back, man. But shout out to David, man, because he 100% nailed that.
Man, I was talking to Candace about it before we came on, and you can go through, look at the fourth quarter box score on the Timberwolves side, and the Grizzlies played great defense, but they were 3-for-19 from the field, 1-for-11 from three, and their big guys were the ones that were not making shots. Anthony Edwards only got up three shots in the fourth. typically you would want to see him get up more than three shots, but he was 1 for 3. Patrick Beverly, who had been playing very well early on, was 0 for 5. D'Angelo Russell was 0 for 3. And then Karl Anthony Towns, he played 8 minutes in the fourth. He was only 1 for 1 because of the foul trouble. There was just something about what they were doing. They played so well in the beginning of this game, so much energy. And I've got to give a shout out to the Timberwolves fans. I know that this is a Grizzlies podcast, but they're bringing it up there. They brought a lot of energy to this game.
No doubt about that.
When this game started, you could hear it on the TV. They were loud. They were screaming, hollering, doing what you have to do in a playoff atmosphere. The Timberwolves were feeding off of that energy early on, but they just gassed themselves out. And that was, I would say, probably somewhere around about 4 minutes to go in the third is where I saw they didn't look like they had their legs, and the Grizzlies didn't look tired at all. And it worked out. You know, that's sometimes you say stuff like that and it doesn't work out. I knew that the Grizzlies would have to work to get that way or to get to that point. Glad it happened. Super glad it happened. But, you know, still work to do, man. This is a great win. Impressive for them to be down, you know, over 25 twice in this game and then come back to win it. But there's still work to do. You still got to get two more victories in this series. And this Timberwolves team is good. The Grizzlies still have to handle business moving forward.
Yeah, man, they ran into an absolute loop buzzsaw. As you said, the Timberwolves fans were fired up and ready. I mean, they've been waiting for this for years, literally. They've been deprived of playoff basketball up there, so they were ready to go and their team gave them everything they wanted to start this game. I mean, they were flying around, I mean, everywhere. Like, everywhere the Grizzlies were, they couldn't find any daylight. I mean, they were all over them, like you said, and that takes a lot of energy. I mean, they were flying around on defense on both ends of the floor, just everywhere. Offensive rebounds, just getting over guys to be three Grizzlies on the basket. You had one guy come in, get offensive rebound. I mean, they were doing everything. Like, it couldn't have went any better. You talk about that start they had in game one in Memphis. This was eclipsed that easily with the way they came out and played. But this team just doesn't quit. I mean, I think it shows tonight. I mean, I don't think it matters what's going on with this team. This team is not going to lay down. And I think a big reason why, and Candace kind of touched on this a little bit, is what tonight was the bench scoring. Grizzlies bench, they outscored the Timberwolves bench 41-22 tonight. And that was huge. And we all know Brandon Clark and his contributions here late in this game. They do not win this game without him. I mean, I think, 20 points, 8 rebounds, a block, 6 of 9 from the field. And what was really impressive to me, 8 of 8 from the free throw line for Brandon Clark. Brandon Clark is not known to be a great free throw shooter, and he knocked down some big ones. Perfect from the line tonight, man. I remember that the possession where Ja missed 2 free throws. You're like, oh, man, you had a really chance to kind of push this lead. I think it would have went from maybe 5 to 7. And Brandon Clark gets the offensive rebound, gets fouled, and goes out and knocked down 2 free throws, kind of saved him there. He was just everywhere. A couple blocks there late. You had Jaren coming back in the game, getting a couple blocks there late. I mean, just really him and Jaren really closed his game defensively. And Brandon Clark's just contributions just all across the board in the fourth quarter, man. Just huge, huge, huge off the bench. And I said coming into this series that he was going to be big and he was kind of the X factor for this team. And, man, he's come up big in all 3 games.
What adjustment that – you can go ahead, Candace. That's fine.
Yeah, no, I was just going to say there was a lot of adjustments that I think that was made that was sort of key in the beginning of the game and at the end. So to start, you know, one thing that of note is that the coach decided not to start Steven Adams this game. Steven Adams didn't play at all this game, actually. Instead, Kyle Anderson was started. And I think that was a pretty interesting decision. I think we went through it because we started Kyle at the second half of the last game. So that went well. And I think that was some of the logic behind that decision. I think that sort of helped. I think this could have been a lot worse. The hole could have been a lot deeper had we started Adams. And so I'm actually glad that we went with the mindset of just starting out with the strategy that had proven itself to be more effective in this series. I heard some people still saying that they wanted Steven Adams to start maybe and get a couple minutes in, but just with the way that Minnesota came out, I think with Steven Adams being the liability that he was, it could have been the difference in the game, to be honest. We never know that now, but anyway, I think that was a good coaching decision. And then down the stretch, I think it was really wise of Taylor Jenkins to play Tyus Jones alongside John Morant off ball. I think that sort of gave Jai a little bit of freedom in terms of being able to roam a little bit. And I think Tyus was able to get some clutch shots down when we needed it. He was able to get the people their shots a little bit better. I think all around, sometimes that lineup can come back to bite you from a defensive perspective, but it's two-part. It goes back down to what David was saying at that time. I mean, sorry, what David was saying, he was talking about how they didn't have the legs. So at that point, when you're talking about defense, it didn't matter as much. I think just we needed the offensive juice. We needed another facilitator on the floor because guys were struggling to shoot, and we needed to put guys in the best position to get their shots off. And so that's exactly what Jenkins did. It was a little risky, but it paid off in the end. So I've just got to tip my hat to Taylor Jenkins for thinking outside of the box, not just at the beginning of the game, but throughout the game. And I think it made a difference in the end.
Robert Perry, if you're listening, man, get that bag ready for Tyus Jones, man. You got to have him back, man. I was early in the season, man, I was on the train that there's no way that he's back, man. But he's so valuable for this team. I mean, you saw with Ja kind of struggling tonight when he came in and just knocked down big shot after big shot and helped have an extra facilitator on the floor when they were kind of D'ing Ja up and getting the ball out of his hands. Man, he's been fantastic in this series as well. The bench has come up big in this series. You talk about the depth coming to this series. A lot of people say, oh, well, the depth is not going to mean as much in the playoffs. It's meant a lot for this team, and that's, I think, the bench is the reason why they won this game tonight. Also, were big in game two.
I think one of the most important adjustments that were made in this game is when, and I mentioned this to Isaac, Patrick Beverley was getting downhill. He was blown by Ja. People were talking about how, you know, he was torching Ja. Patrick Beverley is not a scoring option. He's not. He's never been a scoring option his entire career. Maybe I'm sure that he was in high school. Anybody that got to the NBA was an elite scorer in high school. There's no doubt in my mind. But he's not that guy. He would get downhill, and he was not even looking at the rim. He was looking to pass the whole time. And the Grizzlies were biting on that early super hard, and it was allowing him to make plays, and he put the Timberwolves in a good position, got them out front, got them in the lead because he was getting downhill so much. They made the adjustment where they weren't biting on that so hard later in the game, and it essentially neutralized him, and it changed how this Timberwolves offense was functioning. If I'm the Grizzlies, if I'm the coaching staff, let Pat Beverley beat you. Let Patrick Beverley take 20 shots a game. He can have them. If he goes out here and he scores 40 points and they beat you with Patrick Beverley being their leading scorer, so be it. I would, out of anybody that plays for this Timberwolves team, I'm letting him have it all day long, because everybody else that plays it is on this team that gets rotation minutes. Every single one of them are better scorers than Patrick Beverley. So he doesn't scare me. They've got to stay down and dare him to shoot the ball. And when they started doing that, he started missing. I had the early box scores up. I'm going to pull it back up here to see, you know, he started off really well.
Yeah. I know he's 0-5 from 3.
Yeah. He ended up telling off later in the game. First quarter only. So Patrick Beverley in the first quarter was 3-for-4. And then in the second quarter, he was 2-for-4. So that's all of his shots right there. That's everything. And in the second half, they were able to neutralize him. He was 5-for-8 in the first half, and he ended the game, what was it, 5-for-13?
Yeah, 5-for-13. Yeah.
So all of his damage was done in the first half. So that's an adjustment that was made. Candace pointed out the fact that Jenkins went with Kyle Anderson starting as opposed to Steven Adams. And Candace, I think you made a fantastic point in our previous episode. You talked about that starting title doesn't really mean anything. It doesn't. It's not about that. You don't have to have that moniker. And Steven Adams saying in that last game, "Coach, I'm here for the team, whatever we need to do to get the win." So he's a true professional. He's fine with taking a step back and possibly playing a bigger role in the next series. We'll see what happens. But that leads me to a question. And I told Isaac that I had this question, but I didn't tell him what it was because I want to get a live reaction from you all to see what your answer is. We talked about Jenkins, and we referred to him coming from the Mike Budenholzer tree of coaching. But he did coach. He was an assistant coach in Milwaukee for Budenholzer, but he also came through the San Antonio system. So which way do you lean? Do you feel like Jenkins is more Budenholzer or is he more Popovich? And before I get attacked, I know that Taylor hasn't won anything. I know that he's got a lot to do to be truly compared to Popovich, but you can look at tendencies whenever you're making this kind of comparison and see which way you think.
I think you hope he's like more like Popovich. I think that's obviously what you hope, because you talk about Budenholzer, and Budenholzer is known as a guy who does really well in the regular season, and when he gets in the postseason, he has a tendency to kind of try to do the same thing that got him there and don't make adjustments on the fly, or he's slow to make adjustments. And we've seen Taylor Jenkins operate that way for a while. That's why I was kind of surprised in game two. I kind of talked about these adjustments and I was like, but he's probably not going to do them. We might see a little twist here and there, but I don't think he's going to go full in on these adjustments. And he went full in on them and carried them over to game three. A lot of times we've seen him do things and then that work or seemingly work. And then you go back into the next game and he kind of goes back into the same thing. But if I had to answer your question, I would think I think he's somewhere in between, because I think with Popovich, you see how he kind of believes in his guys. Like most coaches, again, we talk about playoff rotations and shortening rotation. Taylor Jenkins is not scared to play guys. That's one thing. He, from top to bottom of his roster, man, he trusts his guys. And I think that's kind of comes from Popovich. But again, we've seen in the past that he doesn't sometimes make adjustments, but I mean, it looks like he's moving off of that. And I think that's a good thing, because you don't want a coach that's so stubborn and stuck in their ways that it costs you. And I think in game two and three, he came out with two big wins. You now have a 2-1 series lead. And I think a lot of that, or most of it, has to do with the adjustments that we saw from game one into games two and three, because I don't think they win those games without these adjustments. And you talk about adjustments. I knew he had a bad game, but I didn't realize it was this bad. Cat only 8.5 rebounds tonight from Carl Anthony Towns. And we saw how he was getting downhill, just killing his team in game one. That has not happened in game two and three. I mean, they really did a fantastic job on him tonight, man. And it's all about adjustments. We talk about the chess match from game to game. And I think right now, if you look at Taylor Jenkins and Chris Finch, Taylor Jenkins is winning this chess match right now.
Yeah, I think I'm going to go Popovich. I think he leans more in that direction. And I say that because of a lot of what Isaac just said. I'll agree with pretty much everything he just said there. But I also say that the Spurs is known for a system that's plug and play, that it doesn't matter if Tim Duncan was out, Ginobili was out, it didn't matter. They played the same. They had a standard that they played to. Coach Jenkins preaches that a lot about the standard, about sort of next man up mentality, everybody being prepared. That's just how the Spurs rolled. In the end, when it came down to playoff time, you knew you needed all three of the Spurs players in order to really become great. But no one individual piece was greater than the sum of the whole. And I think that sort of Taylor Jenkins' philosophy that he leans more towards more than anything, he's shown some willingness to make some in-game adjustments. I'll say, for example, even if you go back to the last playoff series against the Jazz, I think that, Jonas Valanciunas was sort of playoff floor to some extent. And it, you know, if it wasn't a Popovich tendency, we're going Budenholzer, I think he might just stick with JV just because JV is JV and he's gotten you that far. But that's not what he did. It didn't prove to work. And so he moved away from that decision. He found other ways to try to move pieces around. And it wasn't as successful just because it's a bad matchup and it was our first playoff series. But I think he's shown the ability to learn from that. And he's proven it now. So he's moving off of Steven Adams. He's making in-game adjustments. He's playing Ja and Tyus together to have an extra facilitator on the floor. I think that Greg Popovich is known for sort of thinking out of the box, unconventional ways, for playing sort of chess. Not sort of. He's known for playing chess. That's what makes him such a great coach. He's always looking for ways to move his pieces around to fit them depending on the matchup. And depending on what's going to be most advantageous for his guys, that is exactly what we see more out of with Taylor Jenkins. Not to say there aren't, I always butcher the name, but Budenholzer tendencies at all. I'm not saying that because I think there are some tendencies that's there, but I think if you look at the bigger picture, and it is a small sample size still, there's more to go. But I think, and I'm grateful that he tends to lean more towards the pop of his tree.
Well, thank you. I appreciate the fact that you didn't take the cheap way out like Isaac did, and you actually lean more one way than the other. So,
oh man,
it really is. It's all love, man. I had to. But you know, like you say, it's really too early to tell. Game one, if we ask that question, I think that it's a unanimous Budenholzer.
Yo, 100%. Yeah.
And then he comes out in game two, and I don't know whether his hand was kind of forced because of the foul trouble or what, but you know, at the game two, Adams picks up those two early fouls, and then you know, he goes to Tillman, you know, hits the lottery with Tillman. Tillman played fantastic in game two, and then coming into game three, we were talking about, okay, are we going to see Steven Adams start? What's going to happen? And he decides to go with Kyle Anderson at the four, as opposed to putting Adams back out there into a matchup that we have plenty of evidence showing that it's not a great matchup for him. So it's great. I don't know. I think Isaac said you hope that it is more pop than Budenholzer, and we will still see. And that's the great thing about coaching. You can learn. And it's almost anything in life. You develop your own way. Like you go and you may learn right from somebody that is an all-time great in what you do. And then you may learn something from somebody that nobody ever heard of that you can incorporate in what you do in order to make yourself better. But it's good to see the growth from Taylor Jenkins. The Grizzlies are a young team, second youngest team in the NBA, playing well in the playoffs. And Taylor Jenkins is a new coach. So they're growing together. And I think his ability to pull the trigger on some of these moves throughout this series, it's showing growth from him. And I look forward to seeing what he does moving forward. Because we saw Brandon Clark come out in the second half for the Grizzlies. Do we see Brandon Clark thrust into the starting role in the next game? Because that's kind of, we saw Kyle Anderson, like he played well for the Grizzlies. And so he got the start today. I don't know that I make the change, to be honest with you. I've been one to campaign to start Brandon Clark all season long because of the defense with Brandon Clark and Jaren Jackson on the floor together. But Kyle Anderson has been fantastic on Karl Anthony Towns.
Yeah, I think I agree with you. I think if it's not broke, don't fix it. And I think BC has been working fantastically off the bench. I think that energy and what he brings out the bench, it's really working in this series. So I don't think I mess with it. I think I'll leave him on the bench and let him come in and cook coming off the bench. But like you said, Kyle has done a fantastic job. Didn't have a big night scoring, but, I mean, he did a fantastic job defensively on Karl Anthony Towns. I mean, 8 points, 5 rebounds from a guy of Karl Anthony Towns' stature in a game three in the playoffs at home, especially with as well as they were playing, he really wasn't involved. In those offensive onslaughts, it wasn't him that was doing it. It was other guys. Because, like I said, I didn't even realize until I looked at the box score after the game. I knew he didn't play well, but I was like, 8-5, really? Like, I thought he might have had 13, 14 points. I mean, and that's a testament to Kyle and his defense, because I think that length, he doesn't have the size, but he has the length to kind of bother him. And I don't think Kyle's a fast guy or anything, but he can move his feet enough to keep up with him. And I think that's clearly the best matchup that they have for Karl Anthony Towns. I mean, you really don't want to have Jaren on him exclusively, because Jaren has a hard time enough not picking up fouls when he's not guarding Towns. So I think you stay with that and bring BC out the bench, man, because I just love what he's bringing to that bench unit. Him and Tyus, we talked about him earlier, man, just knocking down big shots. And who would have thought that you'd be counting on Tyus to knock down threes? You go back to last year, and I always remember that quote when coming into camp when me and David were both in the preseason availability with Zach Kleiman and the guys, when they were talking about coming into the season and what they worked on during the offseason. Tyus talked about he put up 350 shots a day because he was disappointed in his shooting, and he felt like he was a much better shooter than he showed last season. And you can tell that he really put it in the work, man, because he's become a serious three-point shooter. It's not like a fluke where he hits couple now. He's a certified three-point shooter. I mean, he's a guy that you have to honor from there, and that was not the case last year. he wasn't a guy that you really had to honor from the three-point line. And you could tell that he put in the work. And again, man, down the stretch, I mean, this team, I mean, they closed this game out in the fourth quarter on both ends of the floor. Like you said, you had BC making the plays he's making. Defense got a block. You had Jaren, I think, coming in, got a couple blocks. They're late on a couple plays at the rim. I mean, it's just – I mean, I don't even know what to say. But to kind of go back to the Bunos and Pop thing, Candace made a fantastic point about the next man up type of attitude. It's the culture. And I think that definitely comes from Pop because you've seen the Spurs do that in the past. No matter who was out on that team, they still play Spurs basketball. And that's the same thing this team does. So even tonight, I mean, you go into this tonight where you had guys not playing well. It's by Jaren Jackson Jr. is in foul trouble. He didn't have a great game offensively, made some plays late. Ja not having a great game. And you have other guys step up. And this team has done that time and time again. And doing it in the regular season is one thing. But being able to come out and do it in the postseason in a game three where you're down big and you have the opportunity to make a statement, didn't look like you were going to get there. In fact, they were able to pull this game out again, man. That's just a testament to the culture, to this coaching staff, and everything they built this season. I just think this is a special team. And you saw that with San Antonio and that group. I mean, I think that definitely comes from that Pop coaching tree.
Yeah, I actually have a couple of points. I want to go back to David, when you were saying, you know, was it just that Taylor Jenkins kind of lucked out that, you know, Steven Adams got those first couple of fouls and he had to dig into his bag?
That's what Fitz said, but go ahead.
Yeah, I was thinking that I actually lean more towards that he had an intention on doing that anyway. And I say that because he was asked about it in the pregame and he just sort of flat out said that he was going to reduce Adams' minutes. That's not really like Taylor Jenkins. Taylor Jenkins is very much so coach speak. So if he were to just limit his minutes by a little or just slightly reduce them, I think he'd probably talk more about the adjustments and the matchups and sort of, you know, seeing the flow of the game. I could see him doing a lot more coach speak, but the fact that he just flat out came out and said that Adams may see some reduced minutes, to me, just him admitting that flat out indicated that he meant some significant minutes. He didn't mean any small, you know, maybe he'd only get 19 this time, like 19 minutes instead this game. I think he really intended on making an adjustment there if he didn't see some change there and kind of put Adams on a short lease. It's sort of without Garnett Strumming. I can understand how people would think it's luck just because of the circumstances, but I think he had that intention and he had a short lease to begin with just based off of that comment right there. And I also want to make a point on when you guys were talking about, you know, my question earlier that I had about Tal Anderson versus Brandon Clark. And I think you guys did make some good points in terms of defense. I think I ended up landing on the same conclusion for Brandon Clark still coming off the bench. But I think the number one reason I came is just because how important the bench scoring ended up being in this game and how important it's been throughout this series. And if you take Brandon Clark's production with 20 points, and if you take Kyle Anderson's production with 4 points and you flip them, then really the Minnesota bench wins. And so, and maybe it doesn't matter. Maybe, you know, ultimately the starters can just be better, but I think you need some kind of production other than just Tyus Jones. Cause if Tyus Jones is the only one out there who can, he's got to facilitate the ball and he's got to also create his own shot because other guys can't get it off. I think that boggles down the bench, the flow of the bench a little bit more and sort of allows the Minnesota defense to hone in on one guy, which I think would be unadvantageous to the Grizzlies. And so as much as I really would love to see Brandon Clark start, because I believe he's earned that for this matchup in particular, I don't think that it's best. He probably should just come off the bench, as hard as that is for me to say.
Man, and for I was going to say real quick, for another example of a plus minus, and David and I have talked about this a lot here on the podcast about it being sometimes it's a real indication of what happened, and sometimes it's not. Brandon Clark, -1 tonight, -1 on plus minus. So that kind of tells you there that it definitely doesn't always tell the whole tale at all.
Yeah. Energy matters coming off of the bench. And I think if you do make that move where you swap Kyle Anderson and Brandon Clark – you don't really have that energy guy coming off the bench. In the regular season, that energy guy could have been DeAnthony Melton, but he's yet to show us anything in the playoffs. He had a decent game in game two, but he reverted and went back to Mr. Do Nothing in this game. And I hate it for him because Grizz Nation as a whole really talk trash about him and how he's just a regular season player. He's not going to bring you anything in the playoffs. And it's It's true. I don't think that that is a long-term thing. I think that he can figure it out and put it together. But we have a big enough sample size here where we can safely say that DeAnthony Melton is not the same player in the postseason that he is in the regular season. What it is that leads to that, I don't know. I couldn't tell you. But I'm one thing, and I wanted to say this, we kind of strayed off down the road a little bit from this point, but Karl-Anthony Towns, we're talking about the 8-5, and I remember a conversation a couple years ago about best big man in the league. And he was in the conversation with Jokic and Joel Embiid. And since then, he has fallen off. And the number one reason, in my opinion, why you can't mention him as the best big man in the league is because he is S-A-W-F-T. Soft as hell, man. Soft as hell. Like, he's a seven-footer, and he can handle the ball fantastic. He plays well on the perimeter, but he will not – go in the post and punish these guys. If you try to put Kyle Anderson on Joel Embiid, Joel Embiid is going to have 50 and 20. He's going to murder him down low because Joel Embiid has that instinct that, hey, you put somebody on me that can't handle me physically, I'm going to punish them. Karl Anthony Towns doesn't have that in him. And the evidence of that is when Jimmy Butler came out and mentioned that he had a problem with him. Jimmy Butler's a dog. And he said Karl-Anthony Towns essentially doesn't have a work ethic, and it shows. He's a fantastic player, has an insane skill set, one of the better players in the league. But in my opinion, until he finds that killer instinct, he's never going to be in the conversation as one of the or as the best big man in the league because he just doesn't have that, and other guys do.
Man, you hit the nail on the head, man. Charmin, man, tissue paper in the ocean. I mean, he is – he's soft, man. I mean, there's no question about that. He's a tremendous front runner. Where when they're up and he's happy, he's talking and enjoying and gets out of control, takes these weird rolls to the basket that he gets away with, throwing all these elbows. But like you said, I mean, he wants to float around the perimeter. He doesn't want to go inside and punish guys because you see it. When he goes inside, he's literally unstoppable. I mean, he's talented as hell. Like, there's no question about it. And I just hate to see guys that waste talent like that. That's why I'm all the way out on him. I mean, there was a point this season where he did get a little bit better. He started going inside a little bit more. But, I mean, he's kind of reverted back to just a guy that just want to float around a perimeter, take mid-range jump shots. And I don't understand that because if you go back and watch film on him and you see him when he goes inside, how dominant he can be when he's on the inside, and he just doesn't do it all the time. And I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's just laziness or what it is, but he does not like to go in and mix it up inside consistently. He'll do it a couple times and then he'll go right back out to the perimeter and try to shoot jump shots. And I don't understand that because, I mean, he could be right up there with guys like Embiid and Jokic if he would go and dominate inside like he should, but he just won't do it.
Yeah, I don't get it, man. I don't understand it. You have an advantage down there. Why not use it? And that's – I'll never be able to figure that out.
I was going to say, he bails teams out. I mean, he's doing them a favor by not going inside. Because, I mean, if he went inside over and over on the Grizzlies, man, it would be a problem. And he just doesn't do it. I mean, I don't know what it is, man, but he bails teams out over and over. I remember, I don't know which one of those games that the Grizzlies won, one of the two that they won this year. And he just kept shooting threes over and over. Like, he'd go inside, and every time he'd go inside, he'd score. They couldn't stop him. And then he'd go out and shoot three-pointers and miss them. And I'm like, all right, well, I appreciate it. And if you're not going to go inside, man, we'll definitely take that. So I don't get it, man.
I have an observation to change this, sort of navigate the subject a little bit. It's going to go back to a point that that Dave was pointing to earlier about DeAnthony Melton and sort of what gets him out of that flow. I have a theory. My thoughts are that DeAnthony Melton is – even in the regular season, shown this to be a very much so dependent on rhythm. We've talked about that before a little bit. But I think really the circumstances have to be right in order to get the best out of DeAnthony Melton. It sort of has to be the right amount of minutes, and it sort of has to be in a rotation he's comfortable with. Whenever his minutes get disrupted or whenever he gets out of a flow, you will always see DeAnthony Melton go, and it takes him a long time to adjust. I think that's just sort of who he is. It's some players are just like that. It just takes him a while to bounce back and find his flow back and find his rhythm back, given the circumstances in the playoffs. It fluctuates so much. There's no, we can't guarantee you a certain amount of minutes on any given matchup. We can't guarantee you'll get a lot of minutes or a little minutes. or a few minutes. But I think that that doesn't bode well for him. And because of that, I'd actually rather see, you know, he played 6 minutes tonight. Not a lot. But I think, you know, if he was only going to play 6 minutes, I don't think you can expect to get a lot out of De'Anthony Melton in 6 minutes. That's just not been who he is, even in the regular season. And so I'd rather see Conchar get those 6 minutes.
I was just about to
personally
say that. Yeah.
I think he'd probably get you more rebounds. I think he'd get you more hustle plays. And you might have a better chance at three from, I don't know. We ain't seen Conchar from the three line. We're not getting a lot from De'Anthony Melton at the three lines. So I don't think you lose anything from that. I think you actually get a lot more hustle plays from Conchar over De'Anthony Melton because he's proven to be consistent in that plug and play system. It doesn't really matter. Conchar just kind of plays his game. And so I think that makes him, crazy enough, a better playoff player.
Yeah, I agree. I think Conchar, I said that after game one. I was like, I think I would put Conchar in there. I kind of call for that. I know we haven't really seen a lot of Conchar in the playoffs, but you've seen De'Anthony Melton in the playoffs, and this is not a one-off. We've seen this over and over. And to your point about him being kind of a rhythm guy, I agree with that, because I think you look back, like you go back to the bubble, and he was playing well until Tyus Jones got hurt, and like without Tyus Jones, he seemed to really struggle. And there are times where he's going out with an injury. He was playing really well, go out, miss a couple games, come back, and he's really struggling. It just seems like the conditions have to be right for him. He has to be playing the same amount of minutes or the same role. Anytime anything changes, his game seems to change. And when you go into the playoffs, that's definitely a big change in rotation and when you're going to play, how many minutes you're going to play. And it just doesn't work out for him, because I don't think it's that he's not getting the same shots, because he's missing wide open threes. And there was a point where he couldn't miss here late in the season. I mean, he was looking like Steph Curry out there at one point, and now he can't throw it in the ocean. And again, man, this is the third time that we've seen this in postseason basketball. So I think it's more of a trend instead of a one-off. I think we have a big enough sample size now to see that for whatever reason right now, he just can't get it done in the playoffs. Is that something that will be the case his entire career? I don't know. But from what we've seen, that's definitely been the case.
Sorry, I was doing some math. Sorry about the little bit of a delay there. I had mentioned something about first off, the Conchar thing, give it a shot. With the amount of minutes that Melton has played, and what was it? It was 6 minutes tonight.
Six 48.
Yeah, just under 7 minutes tonight. If you put Conchar out there, he's going to give you effort. He's going to give you effort. If it's a complete flop, pull him off the floor. It's really that simple. You know, you put him out there, see what he's doing, see if he's able to do what you want him to do. And the guys that they've had De'Anthony Melton guarding, I think that Conchar, Melton's a better defender. I don't think that there's any question about that. But I think Conchar can hold his own against the guys that Melton has been guarding, with the exception of Anthony Edwards, I think would give Conchar a little more trouble than what he does Melton. But yeah, that's give it a shot. You know, 7 minutes of zero production from him essentially. I mean, it had 0 points, one turnover, two rebounds tonight.
Conchar can give you more than that. Plus, he can give you energy. At least Conchar can give you some energy.
Yeah.
Conchar plays a little bit bigger than he is. He does a really good job of tracking rebounds off the rim, like rebounds that guys his size shouldn't get. He finds a way to get, because I think it was against Minnesota in the regular season this year. I think he had 17 rebounds in a game. So I think he could contribute, because he's a guy that, you know, you're going to get max effort every time he comes into the game. And we've seen him knock down open threes. So, I mean, De'Anthony Melton's not hitting them. So, who give him a chance to see if he can knock some down. So, I think I would definitely give him a chance, man. Especially, I mean, you look at De'Anthony Melton tonight, man. Didn't even score minus three. I mean, he played 7 minutes, gave you a couple rebounds, and that's it, man. 0-2 from the field, 0-2 from three. So, only took two shots in both for threes and missed both of those. So, he's not giving you anything. So, it can't be any worse.
Right.
So, by show of hands, who had that we were going to be, you know, campaigning for John Conchar playoff minutes on their bingo card? Because if that's what you were waiting on, you got it tonight.
That Kleiman did.
Like, he probably
that Kleiman did.
But, I mean, at the beginning of the season, we were pissed that John Contrar was out there getting minutes. And now after we play through the season and we're like, hey, man, he's not producing. Jitty has he's proven himself. He went out there. He produced in the regular season. Is he a playoff guy? I have no idea. But this version of DeAnthony Melton is definitely not. He's just not. I'm going to go back to my point here. I mentioned this very briefly after the first game with Anthony Edwards. I talked about him shooting the ball from the left side of the floor as opposed to shooting the ball from the right side of the floor and the differences in percentages. In game one, Anthony Edwards was 10 for 14 from the left side of the floor. Since then, and I hope that the Grizzlies coaching staff noticed this, and so it's an adjustment that they have made, he's only taken 14 shots since game one from the left side of the floor. His combined field goal percentage from the left side of the floor is 53%. From the right side of the floor, he shoots 38%.
Hey, Taylor Jenkins, you listening? We got you, man. So,
like, this is something I know that he's a professional, and he's been good. He's been really good. He's earned a lot of respect for me because coming out of the draft, you know, we've said it before, Isaac and I were out on him because of his attitude, the way that he was approaching the interviews, the things that he was saying. And now, like, he's one of the funniest guys during interviews.
Yeah,
like, you never know what he's going to say, but he's taking the game seriously. And that was something you worried about what his motor was going to be because of what comments he was making. So he's an elite talent. I'm kind of getting off track there. I apologize. But you got to look at this. You got to break this down. How am I going to stop one of their best players? Force him right. I know it sounds like that's kind of a simple breakdown of the game, but the numbers don't lie. You know, he's taken 21 shots from the right side of the floor and 28 shots from the left side of the floor in this series, and there's 15 points difference in his field goal percentage. Force him right. Make him beat you going right. Let your help defense cheat him a little bit and let your help defense help cover you whenever he's going right. If he beats you that way, which is a possibility because he is an elite player, if he beats you that way, he does. But based off of these numbers and everything that has gone on in this series, that would be the game plan for me.
Man, and to take this drain a little bit more off the rails, you talk about him being funny in press conference interviews. Man, I remember one earlier this year where he came in there and they were getting ready to ask him questions. He was like, nah, man, hold on, man. Let me order my McChicken. He was like, oh, making a mobile order on McDonald's. He's like, man, hold on, I got to get my McChicken first. Yeah. He did KFC too, but he said he's ordering a McChicken. I think he said no mayo and a Sprite, no ice. He was like, yeah, nah, I'm good, man. I got my order in. What's up? I mean, he's hilarious, man. And as David said, both of us were out on him covering the Tigers. Memphis played Georgia. I think that was 2 years ago. Or was that last year? I can't remember. The years roll together now that 2 years ago, I guess, now that the pandemic. But Memphis played Georgia, and I sat on press row, and I watched it, man. And when he wasn't making shots, the body language was bad. When they were in timeouts, he wasn't paying attention. He was out doing his own thing while they were kind of in the huddle. And when he wasn't making shots, he didn't play defense. He was lazy. The body language is just terrible. And then he comes out and says basketball is not his first love. And I'm thinking, this dude has bust written all over him. Like, there's no way he's going to be good. And I think now I've come all the way around on him. I mean, the personality is there. The talent is there. I mean, I think he's right there with John. A lot of these young guys are going to be the faces of the league coming up. And I did not see that from him coming into his NBA career, man. But he's definitely made a believer out of me during this time.
What's up, guys? It's David. Before we go any further, I've got to take a couple moments here to tell you about our new partner at Ethos Grizzlies, Ember and Valor. Ember and Valor specializes in beard care products. Let them take your beard to the next level with their easy two-step process. You get started with the beard oil to condition your skin and prevent the dreaded beard itch. You finish it off with Ember and Valor's beard balm to condition and shape your beard. Go over to emberandvalor.com right now and use promo code ethosgrizz for 25% off. Let them get you the beard you've always wanted. emberandvalor.com, E-M-B-E-R-A-N-D-V-A-L-O-R.com, promo code ETHOSGRIZZLIES for 25% off. I've got to run it by you one more time. I can't allow you to miss it. 25% off at emberandvalor.com right now using our promo code ETHOSGRIZZ. That's ETHOSGRIZZ at emberandvalor.com for 25% off of all of their products. Ember and Valor makes all of their products using all natural ingredients. Get over there, check them out, use the promo code, let them know we sent you. You will not be disappointed. EmberandValor.com. Look good, feel good. Yeah, I think that you could argue he's the best player out of that draft class right now. And that's, you know, LaMelo Ball has been, he's been good as well. But I just feel like Edwards has done enough that you can make that argument and find plenty of evidence to back it up. I don't want to keep gassing the Timberwolves up. This is not a Timberwolves show.
Not at all.
We're in a good spot. We talked about the game. Let's run through the box score and go ahead and wrap this one up and get out of here as we get ready for game four.
Yeah, man, the Grizzlies go 35 of 83 for 42.2%. Not a lot of shots up for either side. Grizzlies 35 of 83, Timberwolves 33 of 85, really close. In shots attempted and shots made for both teams for 38.8. So the Grizzlies outshoot them in by percentage. By about 4%. 3-point range, Grizzlies actually outshoot the Timberwolves tonight. And I talked about that coming into this game, and I was like, and coming into the series, that if the Grizzlies could ever match or come close to matching them, it was going to be hard for the Timberwolves to win. Now, they got out big, but Desmond Bain was really got off from the 3-point line tonight. 7 of 15, super efficient for Desmond Bain. So a coming out party for him. But the Grizzlies go 14 of 37 for 37.8%. Timberwolves go 12 of 35 for 34.3%. So that's two games in a row. The Grizzlies tied them last game and hit two more than the Timberwolves coming into the series. And that was kind of the thought, that if Timberwolves went crazy from three and the Grizzlies couldn't match them, that would be kind of that trump card and how they would win the series if they had the opportunity to do that. And two games out of three, they haven't done that. The game that they did, they won game one. So I think that's a big key coming into the series, and I think it's going to be still a big key going forward. Free throws, not a good night for the Grizzlies. Done a great job of getting there in the series. Hit up last game, but 20 of 31 for 64.5%. Got to have that higher than that, even though they were able to win the game tonight. 17 of 23 for 73.9%. So Grizz plus 8 in attempts, but only plus 3 in makes. Second game in a row, Grizzlies get back to their rebounding ways. Out-rebound Minnesota 48-41, 13-9 on the offensive glass. Not a lot of assists from either team tonight. Grizzlies did do a good job of moving the basketball early in the game, but they end up with 22. They outpaced the Timberwolves 22-21, and I think a lot of that was done late because the ball movement for the Grizzlies wasn't good early. I mean, there's a lot of standing around, guys not moving, but that was definitely wasn't the case in the fourth quarter. So I would imagine a lot of those were later into the game in the second half. Only 7 steals for the Grizzlies tonight to 11, 9 blocks to 11 Minnesota, 18 turnovers for the Grizzlies, 17 for Minnesota. Fast break points, man. Minnesota 20-7 over the Grizzlies. That's something that you usually don't see. For the Grizzlies to win a game with only 7 fast break points, that's pretty remarkable with the way they play. And they tie in the paint 40-40. So a lot of those stats, that's something that usually if the Grizzlies don't beat you pretty well in the paint, they don't win games either. So a lot of those stats that you look at usually aren't conducive to Grizzlies' victory. And a lot of that had to do with how bad that was in the first half. But, man, they were able to find a way to win this game, man. Crazy, like I said, talk to the guys. They said they've never been a part of it. I know I've never watched anything like this, man, but it's just amazing. And I do want to ask you guys this question. I know the series is not over. The series is not over. It's 2-1. Grizzlies still have to win 2 more games. But with the way this game went tonight, I mean, Minnesota up 26, Grizzlies come back, Minnesota up 25, Grizzlies able to battle back and end up winning the game going away. Mentally, how do you guys think Minnesota responds to this?
I think it could easily be like David said in Grizz and 5, but I'll understand that if it ended up being the Grizz 6, but either way, Grizz win, period.
I think that they have to have a short memory. That's really, they've like to quote Ted Lasso, they've got to be a goldfish, man, because if you let this game set on you, if you get into game 4 and the Timberwolves have the lead late and the Grizzlies go on a run, are they going to fold? Are they going to collapse? because they're like, oh my God, here we go again. And yeah, these guys are professional, but the playoffs are different. Pressure situations are different. There are guys, you can look across any sport, guys that were absolutely fantastic during the regular season, but as the season would wind down, they couldn't live up to the pressure. They couldn't handle it. And I this is a cheap shot at Isaac, so I apologize in advance, but this is the first one that came to mind for me. Tony Romo, before December, he's one of the best quarterbacks to ever play the game before December. But after December, Tony Romo was not the same guy. And I know that's football, this is basketball, but that's just an example. I'll give you another one. Mark Vanderjagt for the
let's move on to Tony Romo.
He missed a field goal that could have sent them to the Super Bowl, and it broke that dude. He was done. After that. He never. I don't know that he ever made another field goal in the NFL after that. I don't remember if he did. I might be wrong there, but I know that he had the yips after that for sure. And so the mental aspect of sports is so important. That's a huge part of this game. So you can see one of two things. Either the Timberwolves are going to come out motivated, ready to play, and know that they can't let this happen again. So they pace themselves. They feed off of that energy. But instead of expending all of that energy early in the game, they tone it down and they keep some for that fourth quarter. Because, again, go over those fourth quarter numbers. From what the Timberwolves done, it was awful. They were terrible in the fourth, and it's because they had no legs. So they went Lieutenant Dan in the fourth. But that's what I hope happens. I hope that this breaks them mentally. I hope that they are not able to recover from this, and it ends up being Grizz in five. That could be the case, or they may use this as fuel moving forward to, you know, propel them to, you know, send this game further than just five games.
Yeah, Grizzlies outscored 37-12 to finish this game going away. I mean, Grizzlies had a double-digit lead late in this game. I mean, that's crazy to think about when you think about what was going on in this game earlier. But to what we were just talking about, I think it's the latter. I think this is a young team, and I think you win a game like that, or you lose a game like that from the Timberwolves' perspective, I think that kind of takes your heart out of it, because I think you're asking the question and the coaching staff and Finch and staff, like, what can we do? I mean, we played out of our minds in this game, and we had two huge leads two different times, and this team was able to battle back. Maybe it starts to put doubt in your mind. Like, I think they felt like coming into the series, they were the better team. And I don't know how they can believe that at this point. I mean, you get ran off the floor in game two, and then you have what happened? You have the crowd in it. They're fired up. They're doing everything they can do. You're running off two different times, and you still end up losing the game going away. That has to be tough. And I think I'm leaning towards – I said Grizzlies in six coming into the series. I'm leaning toward Grizzlies in five. I think even if it's a closer game, I think the Grizzlies win game four, and I think they come back home for game five on Tuesday and wrap it up. I just – if this was a veteran team, they were going against – that probably wouldn't have happened tonight if this was a veteran team they were going against. But if so – if it did happen, I would feel a little bit different. But with this team being a team that doesn't have a lot of playoff experience all across the roster, and especially a team that talks trash the way they do, and they were built up. They even said it. I think it was Rob Fisher that they talked to some of the guys or something before tonight's game, and they said they felt like after game two that they were too hyped or too happy about their performance in game one and two built up. They were overconfident coming into game two when they got punched in the mouth. And this is two games in a row now. This one going the way it's going. I just don't know if they can muster up what they had previously prior to this. I think they might be done. I could be completely wrong, but I feel like Grizzlies in five at this point.
If it's not Grizz in five, it's outstanding coaching, because it's going to take a heck of a coaching job, because it's a team of players that's known for not having strong mentalities.
Yeah.
Anthony Towns, D'Angelo Russell, and Anthony Edwards he's very new to this whole experience. And then they've got a lot of bench players that just don't sort of have it. It was Patrick Beverley. He's the only person that's really got that sort of fire and fortitude. And I don't know if he'll be enough, especially considering his performance down the stretch, to really get this team up to the level they need to be. If they do pull out another win, though, it'd be phenomenal for coaching. And
yeah,
speak to the influence of Pat Bev.
Yeah, I was going to say, their fans are going to try to come back out and try to get that same energy, but it won't I don't think it's going to be the same as it was tonight, because they had an opportunity. They felt like they had an opportunity to go up 2-1, and they felt like then if they could do that, they had a really, really good shot to throw a knockout blow on Saturday night. And now it's a completely different situation, especially when you're looking at Grizzlies number 2 versus 7. Again, I just don't know if they're going to have that same belief, because I think now they might be feeling like, okay, well, we really aren't as good as this team. This team really is as good as us. We thought we were going to be the upset kids and all of this, and this is starting to look like that might not be the case. So we'll see. I could be completely wrong, but I'm starting to really feel like this is going to be Grizz in 5. And who would have thought that after game 1, man? It felt like this was going to be a long series. It still might be, but I don't think so.
The Grizzlies have to be careful with this, because coming back from a game like this, it gets you an emotional high. Being down, being able to fight back, they can't go into game 4 relaxed, thinking, oh, well, we done it in game 3. We can do it again in game 4. They've got to come out. They've got to play with energy. Not everything is going to bounce the same way, and this could have very easily, if Jaren Jackson checks back into the game, picks up foul number 6 early in that fourth quarter, do they end up making this run to get back in the game? There's so many things that can go wrong that can derail that for you. And I can't remember, when did Jaren pick up 5 at the end of the third? Is that when he got his 5th foul?
It was in the third when he got, exactly the end of the third, but it was in the third for sure.
Yeah. So there's a lot of things that could go wrong for the Grizzlies. They're in a good spot right now. I think that after the showing in game 1, I feel like the mindset has shifted and they're ready for this series. I don't feel like they're going to come out and take it easy. I think Jenkins, when they're going into film, he's going to tear them apart for the bad parts of this game. He's going to let them know, hey, you know, like, this is where we're missing. This is what we need to do. I say tear them apart. Jenkins has not really been a guy that, strikes you as a really get into you type person. But they're definitely going to discuss the downfalls of this game and what they need to do better. I expect to see the Grizzlies come out with more energy and more effort in game 4 than what they had in this
one. Yeah, I think, like you said, they talked about it in the post game, that there's going to be a lot of bad things on that film, things that they got to work on to get better. They're practicing tomorrow, Brandon Clark said. So they definitely have some things to clean up. They can't come into the game feeling like, okay, well, this is over. I mean, we just got to show up and we're going to come out and win this game, because you saw how hard that game is. I don't think Minnesota's going to quit. I just think so. You got to play well, especially on the road, to win a game, because they're going to be desperate. They got to have this game, because if they don't win that one, I think they know it's over. So they're going to come out and give it their best shot. But I think their best shot, when the Grizzlies are doing the things that they're supposed to do, I don't think their best shot is good enough. So hopefully the Grizzlies can find a way to get it done. But I mean, a big, big win tonight, man. It's such a big difference to be walking out of that game 2-1 instead of being down 1-2 with you being at a desperation mode coming up on Saturday night.
We'll wrap this one up. Next game, like Isaac just said, Saturday night, game 4 in Minnesota, and then the Grizzlies come back home on, I think it's Tuesday next week for game 5. Hoping that coming home for game 5, we get to see them with an opportunity to close out this series at home at the FedEx Forum. I think that crowd would be insane. And that game, Grind City, is going to show Minneapolis how it's really done. But we'll go ahead and get out of here. You can get the show on Twitter at Ethos Grizzlies. I'm at DavidW2111. Candace is going to let you know where you can find her. Give us any final thoughts if you got anything, because we kind of ran you out of here. And then Isaac will close us out.
Yep, you can find me on Twitter at Seahawks901. That's C as in cat 901. I'm sorry, C as in cat Hawks 901. Just a great win for the Grizzlies. Some grit and grind. Great to see tonight. Special team, special season. I'm looking forward to seeing what happens on Saturday. Isaac?
Yeah, definitely a special win tonight, man. I mean, we've seen a lot of special moments from this team this year. You go back to, was the Ja 50-point game, or the game against Phoenix where you had D&C team out there and Phoenix playing their starters. You go out and knock them to Santi Aldama, reverse dunk. I mean, just a lot of special things.
Yeah.
Yeah. games where man, we've had guys out, you're like thinking these are going to be losses. They find a way to win games. I think this just adds to this season's lore. Tonight is a special win on a big stage and a game that could really swing this series. It looked like it was going to go the other way, and they were able to find a win. But they'll be back on the Target Center floor, Game 4, late night start on Saturday, 9 p.m. tip on Saturday night. So it's going to be a late one. So get your rest on Saturday, man, and get ready to cheer your Grizzlies on. But you can find me on Twitter at Isaac_Rivals. It's @IAAC_Rivals. But then we'll be back on Saturday night with the post game. Go over to Etsy, those Grizzlies. Give us a like and a follow. We appreciate that. Until Saturday night, we go.
And that will conclude our Sports Ethos presentation.